So this week's Parsha is Parsha's Dvarim. We start Sefer Dvarim. And as we know, we're literally on the hours and the days before Tisha B'Av. And this is Shabbos called Shabbos Chazon. It's a special Shabbos with a special Haftorah. And a lot certainly is going through our minds as Tisha B'Av approaches. I'd like to give us some thoughts and something to think about, please God, as Tisha B'Av approaches. In the beginning of Sefer Devarim, so we know that Moshe Rabbeinu gives Musar, gives Tochacha to Bnei Yisrael. And part of the Tochacha, part of the rebuke that he gives to Bnei Yisrael is he recaps a lot of which has transpired throughout the journeys of Bnei Yisrael in the Midbar. And among the problems that took place, and probably up there among the biggest ones, the most challenging, difficult things that happened to Bnei Yisrael during the time, the Midbar was the Chet HaMeraglim. And Moshe Rabbeinu recounts and recaps exactly what took place with the story of the Meraglim. Now, Bosa, when we study the story of the Meraglim, as it appears in Perek Aleph, shout out to the iPad, when, as it appears in Perek Aleph of the Sixth Parsha, there's a very, very interesting thing that comes to the fore. What exactly was the Nekuda? What exactly was the Chet of the Meraglim? What was their problem? What did they do wrong? It's such a terrible chait that it caused all of them to die in the Midbar. The entire generation didn't make it into Eretz Yisrael. A terrible, terrible chait. But what exactly was the point of the chait? So if you look in the Psukim and in Chazal, you find actually two different, almost contradictory problems that were behind the chait of the Meraglim. On the one hand, we find that there was a problem of a lack of emuna. Like it says in this week's parsha, it says that, "Oy gevalt, how can we go? Achenu emasos levavenu, we're scared. There's big giants there. Oy gevalt." That's how it sounds like on the one hand. A lack of emuna. They didn't believe in Hashem. That's on the one hand. On the other hand, you find various different places in Chazal that there was a different problem. It wasn't a lack of emunah per se, but rather it was a lack of appreciation or a lack of love of Eretz Yisrael. Proof, it says in Parshas Pinchas, you know, these people didn't go into Eretz Yisrael, but the women did. Rashi explains why. Because they were mechavei haaretz. They loved Eretz Yisrael. The men who didn't love Eretz Yisrael didn't go into Eretz Yisrael. But the women, they did. Or it says in Sefer Tehillim, vayim'asu be'eretz chemda. And when it came to describe the Chet of the Meraglim, says, and you, Vayim Asu, what's Vayim Asu? You were disgusted. You didn't appreciate. You thought it was disgusting, the Eretz Chanda and the beautiful land. So we have a bit of a contradiction. On the one hand, it's a lack of emunah. On the other hand, it's a lack of appreciation of Eretz Yisrael. So which one is it? So Rav Pam Zatzal in his beautiful Sefer, Akara Lamelech, explains the following tremendous insight, which is, fellas, it's mamash a life insight to understand what's going on over here. It says Rav Pam, that's all the following. The Gemara says in Maseches Baba Basra, on Daf Kuf Ben Beis Mit Beis. Listen carefully. Am Rabbi Yitzchak, Am Rabbi Yochanan. Hamizake l'ubar lo kana. If somebody gives something to an uber, what's an uber? Uber is a fetus. Someone before the baby is born, baby's inside the mommy. And the someone gives a present or something to the uber, the baby is not kona. The Gemara says, why? Because of the following. Says the Rashbam, if it's Ubar Shalom, if it's his own Ubar, if it's his own baby, Gomar Umakne B'chol Libo. If it's somebody else's baby and you're makne to another fetus inside, there's no kinyan, it's not binding. If it's for a person's own child, it is binding. But not somebody else's. Why? So Rashbam quotes the following beautiful explanation. Says Rashbam, when a baby's in the fetus stage, as a dependent entity on the mother, it's very, very possible that things can go wrong, chas v'shalom. It's very possible that the kid will not be born, chas v'shalom. He'll be a stillborn, God forbid. He'll be born and maybe he'll be chas v'shalom, disformed, chas v'shalom. All these things are still very, very much in the realm of possibility. And therefore, a person is not really machne, doesn't really give over his thing for someone else's baby. But if it's his own baby, a person doesn't think that way. When a person realizes it's my baby inside there. He's makne, he gives everything with all of his heart. You know why? This is thinking maybe Chas Hashem won't be healthy. Maybe Chas Hashem won't make it. When it's your own baby inside, all those feelings of excitement that you have for the baby coming outweigh and totally just blind you to the Chas Hashem, all other realities that might be there, namely, oh, maybe something could go wrong. And that's why when a person is machne something to his own ubar, to his own baby, he will go ahead and it is kona. Says Rav Pam, listen carefully. Here's the pshat. Listen to a beautiful yisod. Says Rav Pam, that is the chayr of the Meraglim. The chayr of the Meraglim was as follows. They lacked emuna. But what was the source of their lack of emuna? There was a lack of appreciation of Eretz Yisrael. Says Rav Pam, had they appreciated Eretz Yisrael the way they're supposed to be Eretz Yisrael, had they had a longing for Eretz Yisrael the way they're supposed to, then just like in the mashal of the kid with the Uber, you become blinded to the challenges that come. You don't say, oh, this problem will go wrong, that problem, Chasam will go wrong. Because after all, it's your kid. So you don't think that way. So too, had they had a proper appreciation of Eretz Yisrael the way they're supposed to, they never would have had the lack of emuna. The lack of emuna, lack of faith, comes from the lack of appreciation. The more they appreciate it, the more they realize, wow, this is a beautiful land, the more they realize, this is my land, this is for me, this is Eretz Yisrael, Eretz HaKodesh, they never would have had any lack of emuna in the moments to come. Rav Pam takes this and he runs with it. I'm going to show you one application he has, and then I'll bring it back to Eretz Yisrael and to Tisha B'Av. Rav Pam says, listen to the following simple thing. Maybe it's a little bit nogea to Rav Mike here also. What are they? A person thinks, you know what, I'm going to go into chinuch. Or you know what? Forget chinuch for a second. I'm going to become a big talmid chacham. I'm going to learn my brains out. I'm going to become a big... I'm going to do really, really well. I'm going to spend my time dedicated to learning and to growing and learning. And then all of a sudden what happens? Starts thinking, oh my goodness, I got to make a living. And how? If I'm involved in learning, involved in teaching Torah, I'm not making the same salary as a guy that's involved in the business world. He's making big bucks. I'm making much less. But how am I going to support my family? So what does he do, Chas V'Shalom? He says, okay, that's not for me. And he throws in the towel, so as we were learning, and he decides, you know what, I'm going to become something else. He says, Rapam, you should understand that the lack of, the shift of gears that he's having, this professional thing, comes from one thing. It's a lack of appreciation of Torah. Had he really, really fully appreciated what learning Torah is about, he wouldn't change gears like that. I'm not telling everyone to become a Rebbe, or a full-time learner. That's not the goal of this. But the point Rapam's saying is the following. Oftentimes, a lack of appreciation is what causes doubts for a person in his life. And if and when a person really appreciates what he has and what he should appreciate, the doubts just fall away. A simple mashal there. Rapam doesn't mean, I'll tell you this mashal. When a person is in love with a girl and he really appreciates her and he really thinks, wow, there's so much potential over here, all of a sudden, all the things that may have quote-unquote bothered him at the beginning, they start to fall away. The sveikos, how am I going to make it? How's it going to work out? And the first few years, we don't have so much income, how are we going to survive? The answer is those sveikos, they fall away because I have an appreciation of what I have. I have something so special, so great. Once I have that appreciation, so the sveikos and the lack of emuna that a person may have in life goes to the wayside. Rabotai, I want to try to focus us on the days that are coming our way, which is the days of Tisha B'Av. Tomorrow's already Erev Tisha B'Av. We're only commemorating Tisha B'Av on Sunday, much of Shabbos, but really Tisha B'Av is on Shabbos this year. So Mamish in the thick of those feelings. Tisha B'Av, as you're going to see, and you'll hopefully have a very meaningful day here in Kol, please God. Tisha B'Av has a lot of themes. A lot of things to talk about. Obviously the central theme is Churban, is destruction. But there's a lot of themes going on Tisha B'Av. And as we go through the kinos on Tisha B'Av, we'll see that there are a lot of different ideas the kinos are trying to portray to us. One certain theme, and one certain idea, fellas, that we have to have in mind as we go through the days of Tisha B'Av, is this feeling of a learning, of a yearning, and a longing for Eretz Yisrael. An appreciation, a wanting, a love, a passion for Eretz Yisrael has to be part and parcel of the days leading up to Tisha B'Av and Tisha B'Av itself. That has to be part of our psyche. In this beautiful sefer over here called Shari Beis Hashem, he brings over here a chapter from Yeruchim Levavitz, the great mashkiach of the Mir Yeshiva. He says the following thing. He says back in the day, when he was living in Europe, maybe even Amir, so once in a while a person came to their town from Eretz Yisrael. And he says, I was a 6-year-old boy, he says, and when a guest came from Eretz Yisrael, he was a mesholach. He was a beggar. He was coming to collect money for a stuck in Eretz Yisrael. He knew what he was. Just him coming and saying, I'm from Eretz Yisrael. You can't imagine the kind of welcome he got. People would come and greet him, and they would say, ah, Ze Yehudi shel Kotel HaMa'aravi. This is a Jew of the Kotel. He says people would come and they would look at him. They would kiss the corner of his garments. Because why? He was a Jew from Eretz Yisrael. He was a Jew that davened at the Kotel. Like they were kissing a Sefer Torah. He says in those days when they used to teach a kid Chumash, in the first grade or whatever, little young age, and they would talk about Eretz Yisrael and giving Eretz Yisrael to Avraham Avinu, so that the graphics of Eretz Yisrael was mamish. It was like you were describing the most incredible, amazing place in the entire world. And unfortunately, Rahman al-Islam, with time, we become accustomed to a place. We get used to it. We lose appreciation. That's true in life in every area, every area, every arena. We sometimes lose appreciation for what we have. And we can't. Kishav reminds us, we gotta yearn for Eretz Yisrael. We gotta have a longing, a desire, a passion comes of Eretz Yisrael. I saw yesterday an amazing story that I'd like to share with you. I'm not going to read the entire thing inside because I don't have time. I'll read you just part of it inside. There was a Jew that passed away a bunch of years ago. He lived in the former Soviet Union. And he was a Rav. And he learned by a great Rosh Yeshiva in the Mir Yeshiva, actually, back in the day. Then he came to Russia and he was forced to lose his job as a rabbi under the communist regime. And it was the time, my father actually was one of the people that went, that was sent on missions to Russia of then, to go and encourage Jews, you know, to be mechazik them. There was a fellow, a Rav, whose name was Rav Bronstein, who came to the former Soviet Union to be mechazik people. He gets off the plane, he walks straight in to the Jewish community and says, you have to run to the hospital right away. There's a great Rav, his name is Rav Yitzchak Krausliyetskiev. That's a Russian name, if I ever heard one. Krausliyetskiev, who needs to see you. This Rav, Rav Bronstein, had been to Russia before. He had met this Rav once, twice before. And as soon as he was summoned, as soon as he was called to go see Rav Yitzchak, he went right away to go see him. Listen to what happened. Listen carefully. He walks into the room, he fakes, he says, I'm a nephew of this Rav, I gotta go see him. Listen to me carefully. What are the words of this Rav Yitzchak? We don't have much time. As you know, many years ago, I wrote an explanation on the Rambam. The second volume was never published. Underneath my pillow, I have smuggled in a notebook of my chidushim. Place your hand near my forehead as if you're taking my temperature. Instead of placing your hand on my forehead, reach behind my head and under my pillow. Then, take the notebook, hide it in your jacket pocket. But be careful that you don't draw any unnecessary attention to yourself. If the authorities are at least a bit suspicious, they'll send you off to Siberia. So Tzvi, this Rav Bronstein, did as he was told and safely concealed the precious notebook inside his jacket. Yitzchak again summoned the strength to speak. Promise me that you will print my printings, and I promise you that you will be greatly rewarded. But Rebbe, I don't even know if I'll ever make it out of here safely. How can I promise you something that I don't even know what's going to happen? Then at least promise me that if you get out of here, you'll do as I ask. Rebbe Tzvi nodded and humbly accepted the awesome responsibility. Rav Yitzchak gasped for air and was visibly struggling for his breath. Listen carefully, fellas. One last thing. For the past 40 years, I have lived in the shadow of the Kremlin and worked as a librarian. I had two rooms. In one of them I slept, and the other I wrote. They always thought that I was doing some other type of work in there, but really I was writing a perush on the Talmud Yerushalmi. I knew that at any moment I could be caught and sent off to Siberia. But I felt I had to do it. My daughter in Leningrad has the thousands of pages of notes that I wrote. They are safely hidden, but I ask you to visit her and publish those as well. Please, I beg you. And Tzvi was entirely overwhelmed by the task he was being assigned, but since he had not been given a choice, he agreed to try to publish the cherished manuscript. Listen carefully, folks. Here it comes. I have one last question, what Tzvi said. He didn't want to trouble the tzaddik, but he had to know one thing. Tell me, why would a disciple of Rabbi Eliyahu Baruch Kamai, a student of the Lithuanian method of learning, spent the last 30 to 40 years of his life writing a parish in the Talmud Yeru, Shalmi, when the vast majority of yeshivos occupied their time with Talmud Bavli. At first, Yitzchak's eyes stared off in the distance, but then he cleared his throat. Bit by bit, he began to formulate his answer. Listen closely. For many years, I dreamed of reaching the shores of Eretz Yisrael. I tried every method I knew, but it was all to no avail. It was obviously not so simple for me, a Russian Jew, to achieve this elusive goal. So instead, I resolved to reach Eretz Yisrael the only other way I could, by swimming in the seas of its Torah, the Talmud Yerushalmi, where I would learn the mitzvot atliyos ba'aretz, the mitzvot of Eretz Yisrael. When I started, it was a Shemitah year, so I began to learn and write Chidushim on Masechah Shviyas. By immersing myself in those hallowed waters, I found myself attached to the beloved land. Once I was there, I could never bring myself to leave. And that is why I spent the years learning, writing about Talmud Yerushalmi. Exhausted, he closed his eyes and said goodbye. Rav Tzvi, inspired as ever before, wiped away the tears that streamed down his cheeks, bent forward and kissed him on the forehead. The next morning he passed away, this Rav Yitzchak. And the Svarim were published, and the second volume of the Yerushalmi is this story. Abosai, to long for Eretz Yisrael, to long for Yerushalayim, to long just to learn of Eretz Yisrael and the Talmud Yerushalmi, just because that's the Talmud of Eretz Yisrael, this is our challenge. We have Eretz Yisrael, we're in Eretz Yisrael, so it's hard to long for something that we have. That's part of the days, Abosai. That's what we need to do. We need to try our best to link in and to appreciate and to long and to want and desire. And the more, please God, that we do that, the more our Kadosh Baruch Hu will look down on us and say, you want it so badly, you're yearning for it so much. Okay, enough is enough. The time has come. Halavai, Meher B'Yameinu, we'll be able to see coming Mashiach. Meher B'Yameinu. Have a good Shabbos.